නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඒකායනෝ අයම් භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta. So Satipatthana Sutta is one of the very popular sutta among the practitioners, because it directly deals with mindfulness, development of the mindfulness, and the path which we have to develop in order to further develop our mindfulness. So basically, Satipatthana Sutta hence give us a lot of insights and a lot of guidance on our practice. Now, in this Satipatthana Sutta, there are four Satipatthanas: Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana. In the Kayanupassana section, Buddha teaches us how one can use one's own body to develop mindfulness and wisdom. And then in the Vedanupassana section, Buddha teaches us how various feelings can be used to develop mindfulness. And in the Chittanupassana section, Buddha talks about how mind can be used to develop mindfulness. And again in the Dhammanupassana section, how various phenomena can be used to develop mindfulness. So one important thing is here we have to directly know all these experiences. It is not that we are reading a book or we are learning through someone. Rather, we directly have to experience all this what we have mentioned, and that is the most important thing. It's a experiential knowledge. It is not a borrowed knowledge, or it is not a book knowledge. It is not a knowledge that we simply gain through listening. Rather, at that very moment, we simply have to experience. Through the experience, one has to understand many things. So that is what being explored in this Satipatthana Sutta. So there are many other methods Buddha has mentioned. Say, for example, in Chankhi Sutta, Buddha talks about how the faith can be used to gain knowledge, and similarly, how one may basically use various knowledge came from generation to generation to gain knowledge, and then how one can contemplate one's own mind in the sense that simply ruminating, sort of thinking again and again, and how that kind of a contemplative thinking can be used to gain knowledge. So likewise, several methods Buddha explain in various other suttas, and he says anyway, Satipatthana is one of the unique approach where Buddha is emphasizing the direct experience as a way of gaining proper knowledge. Now, in this situation, so when certain things are available or when certain things are felt in our body, so it may be various bodily processes, we are using those bodily processes to understand the nature of the body. And where there are various feelings are available either in the body or in the mind, so those can be used to recognize the situation, the behavior of the body and the mind. Similarly, when one observes one's own mind, so that also helps us to understand various behaviors, variant tendencies in the mind. So likewise, it's a kind of a self-observation, a self-investigation, and in a way kind of an experiment. Sometimes it's called as a noble experiment, Arya Paryasana, because it's a kind of an approach that we haven't taken much. So we typically see outside, and we always look outside and find faults with others and trying to find various solutions from the outside. But here we are trying to go inside, watching inside, observing inside our own selves, and then trying to understand what's really going on. Now, right now we are in the Dhammanupassana section, and Dhammanupassana section is fairly ordered in a way to go deeper, in the sense that Buddha starts with nivarana, hindrances, and by recognizing them, one is able to cleanse one's mind, to have a fairly free mind, pure mind, and then that knowledge, that kind of a capacity will be further strengthened by introducing various khandhas, aggregates. So whole experience of ours can be represented to five khandhas, and then Buddha is taking us there. And then how we deal with the outside using our senses, so that is being observed, analyzed in the next section, that is called the ayatana or the sense basis. And then enlightenment factors are being developed because we are now in a fairly advanced level. We are not being carried away by various thoughts or various incidents. Rather, we have the capacity to watch those incidents, those processes, like an outsider. So we are not driven by that process. We are not driven by that defilement. Rather, we have the capacity to come out of it and observe it objectively. So as a result, enlightenment factors are now going to develop, and so that is being discussed in the fourth section, that is the enlightenment factors section, Bojjhanga, Pabba. And ultimately Buddha talks about Four Noble Truths, so that is again one of the key teaching of the Buddha, and talks very refined observation of various suffering, various stresses, tensions available in the body and the mind. And that is also recognized or observed objectively, so that insights are arising. Now these various teachings or methods are arranged in a very beautiful manner, starting with some rough levels and then go deeper and deeper to the most refined understandings, and that is the Four Noble Truths. So on the other hand, this kind of an understanding also can happen to some extent when one develops Kayanupassana. If one is fond of Kayanupassana, one is dedicated to a Kayanupassana, so this same understanding is possible. Similarly, if one develops Vedanupassana and really strive there, so there this kind of an understanding is also possible. Again, if one develops Chittanupassana and fairly dedicate fair amount of time from the beginning of our day to the end of the day, if we are vigilant about the mind, observing the mind, and this kind of an understanding is also possible. Now in Dhammanupassana, Buddha fairly focuses there to this kind of understanding, and if not understanding or sort of freedom hasn't happened yet, so for such a yogi, Dhammanupassana section again and again emphasize revisiting those previous anupassanas and using various phenomena, and fair strength being given to the yogi, fair understanding being given to the yogi to free one's mind. So therefore this is in a way fairly comprehensive, and we discussed during the last time about some aspects of nivarana. So there are five nivaranas: hindrances, kamachanda, that is the sensual desire, vyapada, ill will, Srottantopa, that is Thinamidda, and Uddaccha Kukkuccha, that is restlessness and regret, and doubt, that is the Vichikiccha. Now these are typically called Nivarana because that is covering our mind. So we have the, say, pure nature, or we have the fairly free nature of the mind, but that is typically being covered because of these hindrances. So Buddha therefore mentioned that all the beings have this very pure nature in themselves, very innocent, simple, pure, unattached, unentangled nature is there in the mind, but unfortunately that is being covered because of these hindrances, that is being covered due to various defilements. But that is the outer sheath, we can say, outer cover, we can say. So therefore Buddha says that outer cover can be penetrated, outer cover can be removed. So once one is able to remove that outer cover, the cover or the sheath, wrapper, So then one again is in a position to touch that pure nature, touch that fairly clean nature of the mind, pure nature of the mind. So likewise, one has to once gain confidence that I also is capable of doing this, I can at least temporarily experience this purity. So how about further improving it, enhancing it, maintaining it for a long time? So likewise, one gains confidence, and then one develops morality, one develops further concentration if necessary, maintaining the clarity of the mind, and again applying wisdom to cleanse the mind. Now, in that respect, we can little go further on these nivaranas, because having fair understanding about hindrances is quite useful. Buddha gives various similes to these nivaranas, because through similes one can understand what really has happened to the mind. For example, in Sangharava Sutta, that is in Bojjhanga Samyutta, Buddha mentioned the availability of nivarana, availability of hindrances are like kind of a colored water vessel where one trying to observe one's own face. Say for example, there is a kind of a vessel that to that we have put a fair amount of water, and assume we are trying to observe one's own face. So if it is really pure and again very clean water and it has no turbulence, then we can easily see our face, it may properly reflect. But on the other hand, assume that you mix certain color to it, certain dye to it, and then it completely become that color, and your face might not properly visible because that color being fairly hindered the vision. Buddha says similarly, when sensual desire is prevalent in the mind, so it actually blocks that purity, it actually sort of hinders that purity, and as a result we are not able to understand what is really going on. We don't have the capacity to see the real picture, see things as they truly are, because it is being colored. Now that therefore Buddha sort of give an analogy that when the mind is under the influence of sensual desire, it is very much like you are putting some color to water, then you can't really see through it. And on the other hand, assume that same water being boiled, it has now really boiling and water bubbles are coming, and while boiling you can't again see your face because it is being boiled, it is really heated. So Buddha says similarly, when mind is under the influence of ill will, it is very much like that. So you can't really get the correct picture, correct perspective, because mind is heated, mind is boiled. On the other hand, assume that same water basket or water bucket, now you are keeping on a particular place for long, long time, and now due to rain and all these creepers, now they come and almost covering it. It's somewhat foggy now. And because of this fog, you can't again see your face. It has become covered and discolored because of the fog. And Buddha says similarly, if one's mind is under the influence of Shraddha and Topa, so again your mind, you can't see your face properly. You can't get the correct perspective, you can't see the details properly because it is fairly foggy. On the other hand, when mind is restless, so that Buddha compares with the turbulent water. Assume there's a huge wind and blowing, and as a result there are many waves on the surface of the water and it become turbulent. So at that time, if you again try to see your face, you can't see it, you can't get the proper reflection. So Buddha therefore says, if one's mind is under the influence of restlessness and the regret, Uddaccha Kukkuccha Nivarana, and then you are not in a position to see your face properly, so you can't understand the reality. Similarly, when the water is mixed with some muddy, some mud or whatever, some kind of impurity, and again you keep it in a dark place, and if you try to see your face, again you can't. Similarly, Buddha says, when the mind is under the influence of various doubts, kind of a perplexity, then you again you can't see the real picture, because mind has become fairly discolored, and again you don't have the enough illumination to see. So therefore Buddha says, having vichikicca, doubt, is something like that. So now we have some idea about what is really happened when mind undergoes these hindrances. So it become colored, it become obstructed, it become sort of foggy, and again it's kind of boiled, heated or turbulent. So this is the typical nature of a mind when it is under the influence of hindrances. On the other hand, Buddha gives us the opposite type of similes when he is talking about hindrances, when the mind is free from hindrances. Now here, those are also very interesting. Now assume that you have taken a huge loan, maybe from a bank or from a person. So once you have this kind of a loan, that you are in debt, so you have a lot of kind of a responsibility to pay it off. So every month you may be paying the interest, or you have to pay the installments. So likewise, you are constantly being bucked by this thing. You are being burdened because of this debt. And they also sometimes influence you. So likewise, you are fairly being pressurized because of this debt. But on the other hand, assume now you got kind of a good fortune opportunity, and fortunate opportunity, and you are able to completely pay it off. Now you are completely free from the debt. You are no more in debt to anyone. On this situation, Buddha says, similarly, the mind free from sensual desire is like that. So when the mind is under the influence of sensual desire, so we are very much like in debt. But once you pay off, then your mind becomes completely free. You feel really free, you are not burdened, and you feel lighter because you are no more in debt to anyone. So therefore Buddha says, the mind free from sensual desire is something like that. So you feel free. Your mind is not burdened now. You feel free because the sensual desire has gone. So this freedom, in a way, we need to appreciate and we need to understand. We need to recognize. So you can understand when you are you have to pay something, pay off, then in a way you are being burdened, you are being hindered. But once you completely pay it off, then you feel free, you feel relaxed, you feel lighter, you feel that you are not burdened now. So that freedom, that feeling lighter, that relaxation has to be recognized, that has to be appreciation. And then on the other hand, Buddha gives another simile, when you are under the influence of any kind of sickness, say you got COVID-19, or you got many other, whatever the, say, illness, so you are being burdened by that, you are suffering from that. You can't move, you can't eat whatever you like, you can't be with your friends. So it's a real mess actually. Now you are under the influence of a kind of a sickness, illness. Assume now you are able to completely recover from it. Now you feel free again. Now you feel no burden. And you can move with others, you can eat whatever you like. So likewise, now you regain the health. Now you feel happy. Now you feel freedom. So Buddha says, when mind is free from ill will, something like that. So we need to recognize this freedom. When there is no ill will, so we need to appreciate that free mind. It is no more burning. It's no more you are sort of sick. that sickness has gone. And this free and healthy mind has to be appreciated, has to be recognized. Similarly, Buddha says when one is under the influence of sloth and torpor, it is very much like one is in a cell, one is in a prison. You don't have any freedom. You don't know, you can't do anything whatever you like. You can't be with your friends, with your family members, because you are being sort of imprisoned. Assume that you are in a jail. So you don't have any freedom at all. You are being sometimes tortured, you have to do a lot of hard work, and many punishments are there. So you are completely in a cell, in a prison. Assume due to some reason you got the freedom. Say due to the Independence Day, due to the, say, kind of forgiving. So you got the freedom. So now, again you feel relaxed, again you feel lighter, again you feel a lot of freedom, again you can be with your friends, your family members, you can move, what you can go wherever you like, so you enjoy this freedom, you can recognize this freedom. Now when we are coming out of this drowsiness, we are coming out of the sleepiness, then again we gain that freedom, we become active again, we can move as we like. Similarly, therefore, Buddha mentioned this freedom from sloth and torpor is very much like freedom from imprisonment, freedom from a cell, freedom from a jail. So this again has to be recognized. So this freedom has to be recognized, has to be appreciated. On the other hand, suppose you are being enslaved by someone. So you are a slave. So you can't move as you like. You can't be with your friends. So you are a slave. Now you can understand how kind of a pathetic situation with the slave. Because he's being tortured. He's being asked to do this and that. He's simply a servant. He's a slave. But due to some reason, assume that you got the freedom. Now again you are back with your friends. You are with your family members, you can move wherever you like. So you are a free man now. You are not a slave. So Buddha says, when one is under the influence of regret and restlessness, you are like a slave. So you are completely not in a position to move as you like, because you are like a slave. But if once you become free, then again you can feel that freedom. You can feel that sort of outside world. And therefore Buddha says when one's mind is free from regret and restlessness, it is very much like one becomes free from slavery. So that again one has to recognize, one has to appreciate. And assume that you are going in a long journey through a desert. It's very difficult. It may be really heated, no water, you are suffering with less food, and many difficulties are there. And you don't know exactly how to go to the other side, when the sort of the next village is arriving. So you are in a complete perplexity. So in a complete hard situation, because you are in a desert. Now assume that you are able to completely cross the desert and you reach a village. Now again you are feeling lot of relax, lot of freedom, lot of happy, because you are being with the other people now. You can move fairly easily now, you have enough food and water and you are free. Similarly, Buddha says when mind is under the influence of doubt, so it is very much like you are in a desert. You completely lost the way. You don't know the direction. But once your mind is free from doubt, it is very much like you're free from the desert. So you can understand how influential these similes are. They are so powerful. And all five similes are indicating some sort of a freedom. So when you are under the influence of hindrances, you are not free. But on the other hand, when the mind is free from hindrances, you have to feel free. Actually, we feel free, but important thing is we are not appreciating it. we feel somewhat bored when mind is not agitated, when mind is not enjoy any kind of a sensual desire. In a way, I can't tell the word enjoy. It's very much like under the influence of sensual desire, mind being agitated. You are somewhat sort of agitated mind. And again, when the mind is under the influence of ill will, mind is heated. But unfortunately, we like it. Again, say if you don't have anything to regret, you take something happened in the past, and again you think about it, and you like to get regretted. So again and again you regret. And you don't like to simply stay calm, and you feel it like bored, and you like restlessness. So you go there, you talk to someone, and you see a lot of newspapers, or watch movies, or see the internet, and you agitate the mind again and again. So introduce restlessness. So we have the nature to agitate our mind in a way. We have the nature to enjoy these hindrances. We like them in a way. But when all these hindrances are not available and we feel like bored, so therefore again we agitate our mind. So that is what really has happened to ourselves. So this freedom from hindrances is something that we need to properly recognize. And once you recognize that, only you can cultivate it. Because you understand how lighter you feel, how sort of fresh you feel, how unburdened you feel, how free you feel, how spacious you feel, how unattached you feel. So all these qualities are in a way very subtle, and you have to have a fair amount of retrospection. You have to see inside in order to recognize these qualities. And once you are able to recognize that qualities, then of course you can further enhance it, further maintain it. Now, so when you are able to recognize these hindrances, then you can stop reacting to them. Assume there's a sensual desire available in the mind. Without being driven by it, without being a slave to it, you can recognize hindrance as hindrance. So this is one of the important thing. So rather than being driven by the hindrance, rather than being a victim to hindrance, we should be able to come out of the hindrance and look at it. And if you are able to look at it properly, if you can be mindful about it, if you have a fair amount of mindfulness, then this very mindfulness appear like a kind of a blockage, kind of a dam to this hindrance, the flowing of hindrance. Assume Buddha actually give that simile. So all these hindrances, all these defilements, he talks like a flood, ogre. So the mindfulness, sati, appear like a kind of a dam, kind of a blockage to this flood. So now it is under check. Now it is under the blockage of this mindfulness. So there you can recognize, okay, this is sensual desire, this is ill will, this is sloth and torpor, this is restlessness, this is regret, this is doubt. Likewise, you can properly recognize them. So once you recognize them, we need to stop feeding them. Now we completely stop feeding them. We have the proper perspective, we have the proper understanding. We are looking at them objectively, and we are no more a victim of them. As a result, they start to fade away. And this actually prevents proliferation. Now, when hindrances are present, so if we promote them, if we feed them, then we are going on and on in a long story, ruminating, proliferating. But on the other hand, if we are able to recognize these hindrances, then we can stop that vicious cycle and we can calm down again. We can come back to that clarity of mind. And on the other hand, when there are hindrances, if we are properly recognizing them, we don't need to condemn ourselves. So sometimes when there are hindrances, we look up, we condemn ourselves. Why am I thinking like this? Why am I so nasty? so mean. So likewise, we sometimes criticize ourselves. But when we recognize hindrances as hindrances, we are able to look at them objectively. They are not me. They are not mine. They are not myself. So now we have that detached observation. So we got detached from these hindrances, and they are not mine. They are not myself. They are not me. And I can look at them objectively. So likewise, as a result, these hindrances start to fade away. They become weaker and weaker. So once they become weaker and weaker, assume you are able to have freedom, at least temporary, for some time. All the hindrances are subsided, and you are able to back in that sort of the pabassara chitta, that is the pure nature of the mind, or the spacious nature of the mind, simple nature of the mind, unattached nature of the mind. So once you are there, that has to be recognized. So that's what I again and again emphasize. So this unattached nature of the mind, free nature of the mind, unagitated nature of the mind has to be recognized, has to be understood, has to be appreciated. And when you are not promoting them, and you are able to maintain that clarity, so then more and more you feel calm, you feel relaxed, you feel unagitated, and you start to see a different dimension of our mind. So far our mind are under the influence of hindrances, but now they are not. Now, one important thing is more and more we start to look at ourselves, more and more we start to reveal all these intricacies of the mind, reveal all these tendencies of the mind, so we start to realize about ourselves. What has really happened? Why am I behaving like this? Why am I getting under the influence of these different hindrances? So likewise, you start to look at yourself. You try to do a kind of a self-investigation. Now there are some more insights we can join here. So in another sutta, that is in the Dvedha Vitakka Sutta, Buddha mentioned that whenever you are thinking in a particular way, again and again, suppose you are thinking under the influence of lust again and again, some sensual desires are rising again and again, so you are thinking more and more on that direction. So ultimately, there's a kind of a tendency in the mind, kind of an inclination in the mind to think the same way. Now you don't need to purposely think, but the mind itself start to think in the same line. Kind of an inclination being developed in the mind when you start to purposely think again and again on a particular subject. Similarly, suppose you start to think about someone and you don't like him. Sort of resentment is now developing. Again and again you are thinking, again and again you are purposely thinking. Ultimately, now you don't need to purposely think, but naturally or habitually, now you are thinking kind of a angry way, sort of a resisting way about that particular person again and again as a natural effect. Now this kind of an inclination is happening in the mind. So actually nowadays it's called neuroplasticity, where you are thinking in a particular manner, and if you do it again and again, so that become a sort of a habit that become deeply engraved to the sort of the brain. So similarly, on the other hand, so assume that you are thinking in a more positive way. So you develop loving kindness, you develop, say, compassion. So likewise, some sort of positive quality again and again. So that becomes the sort of habitual tendency. So these actually we can recognize through our own mind. Why am I behaving like this? So we have to do sort of a very honest kind of a reflection in order to recognize this. Rather than sort of rationalizing it, we should be able to look at it objectively. We should be able to have a unbiased observation. Then only we can reveal all these tendencies. So therefore, in this Nivarana section, Nivarana Pabba, So Buddha first talks about the presence or the absence of hindrances. And again, once you are fairly familiar with it and you are able to handle them, then the clarity of mind is improved, the spaciousness of the mind is improved. Now you can maintain some clarity of mind for certain amount of time. So there is a period where the mind is completely free from hindrances. So you enjoy calmness, you enjoy freedom, you enjoy equanimity, you enjoy clarity. Again, assume due to some reason, a hindrance coming, a hindrance is arising. So you have the capacity, the skill to see this arising nature of the hindrance. Anuppannassa kamacchandassa upado hoti tancha pajanati. When there is sensual desire arising, it was not there. You were in a clear mind, you were in an equanimous mind, but now sensual desire is arising. So you can understand why it is arising. What are the causes? Because you are very vigilant, you were in a very calm state, but now sensual desire is arising. So you can recognize what are the causes. So once you are able to recognize those causes, so in a way we are now slowly in the Patisamuppada, dependent origination. Once you are able to recognize the causes of hindrances, why these particular hindrances are arising, so then you can actually try to further purify your minds because you know the root cause. On the other hand, assume you understood the hindrance and now it is present in the mind. Now, when a hindrance is present in the mind, available in the mind, now we have to properly deal with it. If we make it mine or myself, or if I get afraid of it, again we are sort of feeding it. On the other hand, if we are lack of mindfulness, we become a slave to it. We become driven by it. So if we have enough mindfulness, so we can do this detached observation, sort of a non-judgmental observation we can do. Where hindrances is there, so you can step back and you can watch it. So there are various methods you can use to slowly overcome that. Either you can go to the root, you can use Yoniso Manasikara, you can go a little backward, how it has arisen. Or you can recognize the sort of gross nature of the mind. Right now what you are experiencing, previously you have fairly subtle, fairly lighter, spacious nature of the mind, but now it has become gross, it has become sort of burdened. So likewise, there are various techniques you can apply to again purify the mind. So therefore, various methods you can recognize, you can apply when there is a hindrance available in the mind to remove it. On the other hand, so once the hindrance has gone, faded away, so that clarity, that freedom, and that awareness has to be maintained. And what are the causes, that? What are the conditions, what are the possibilities that you can use to maintain this clarity, to protect this clarity, to sort of prolong this clarity, prolong this calmness. So that is again has to be recognized. So in a way, therefore in this section, Buddha is taking us fairly deeper into the, we can say in a way, kind of psychology, where you are when there is no hindrance, you can recognize that is absent. When there is a present of hindrance, you can again understand that. And as you develop that skill, then you gain the capacity to see even the very early stages of the arising of hindrance. So there you have the capacity to see the causes, why this hindrance is coming or again arising. So you can have some idea about the causes of this hindrance. Assume it is available in the mind. Now you have to have some understanding about the methodologies, various techniques which you can apply to remove that hindrance. And on the other hand, when the mind is free from hindrance, or that particular hindrance now has faded away, now we need to sort of understand how I can maintain it, maintain this free mind, maintain this unburdened mind, maintain this clear mind, how to prolong it, how to enhance it. So again, we need to do some sort of a investigation. So in a way, all these are helping us to understand the dependent origination. So these hindrances are not sort of by themselves arising. There are many other causes, and due to those causes and conditions, so they are arising. So unknowingly, I may be feeding them, and as a result, I start to proliferate. I again become sort of under the influence of hindrance. I become driven by them. So, but on the other hand, once we are properly recognize this mechanism, then we are able to unentangle this whole, say, knot. We can again have a free mind, unentangled mind, unburdened mind, spacious mind, simple mind is able to regain. So likewise, we can see the understanding of these hindrances are very interesting and very necessary. And once we are able to apply this knowledge practically to our own mind, then the hindrances become a way of improving knowledge. Now we are no more afraid of them, but we know how to develop mindfulness using them, how to develop wisdom using them. Now it is very much like you are preparing some good compost or whatever you call a kind of a fertilizer from garbage. So we can consider nivaranas are like garbage, but if we handle it properly, then we can get a good fertilizer. So we can have in sort of we can use them to improve wisdom, we can use them to improve mindfulness. So like that, so Buddha talks about hindrances in this Dhammanupassana section, and I like to conclude today's sutta teaching from that. Now I open the session for questions.
So for any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions directly by raising your hand, or you may ask them via the chat function. I don't have a question yet, Bhante, so maybe we'll give it a moment.
Yeah, sure. So all minds are free from hindrances, isn't it, Jennifer?
So Bhante, would it be next week that we talk about how do we overcome the hindrances that has already arisen in mind?
Yeah, we discussed that. Next week I thought of discussing the khanda aggregates and. Overcoming hindrances, actually, here, according to the Satipatthana Sutta, basically by developing mindfulness. As you develop more and more mindfulness, so you are able to clearly recognize hindrances. And advantage is we are able to recognize them at their early stages. We are not allowing the mind to be captured by hindrances totally. Rather, we are able to maintain some clarity of the mind. Now there's a arising of hindrance. So you can see this arising nature of the hindrance. So that is where the mindfulness has fairly improved. So this very understanding basically stops further feeding of the hindrance. And then this particular hindrance going through its typical lifespan and ultimately cease. So you can see how a hindrance has the nature to come or nature to arise and maybe staying only for a short period, and then it fades away, then it ceases. So you can see this cyclic nature of the hindrance arising and passing away. Nature is available even to hindrances. So likewise, you are now developing mindfulness and wisdom using hindrances. So when one is able to see that nature, so you are developing in the way Satipatthana Bhavana, the meditation, and in order to maintain that clear mind, you need fair amount of morality, clarity of mind as well as wisdom.
And Bhante, during today's talk, you mentioned about seeing kind of the causes of the hindrances. Is that something that is a help?
Sorry, you are being muted.
Yes, sorry, there's some background noise on my side.
Right.
I had to mute my microphone.
Right.
So when you talked about understanding the causes of these hindrances, obviously with our mindfulness and we continue to observe the arising of the hindrances, then we'll begin to see kind of what causes it. But does it also... is it helpful to actually apply some thinking mind to analyze the cause of the hindrances? Or does that just cause more proliferation of thinking?
That actually we have to do carefully. So, I mean, certain amount of thinking. So, because, say, for example, yoniso manasikara, no harm. Say, currently, you are under the influence of a particular hindrance. So, if you want to look back how it has grown to this level, so probably you can while you are reflecting back, so it may be a little thinking, but it is not that unmindful thinking. It is not sort of obsessive thinking. Rather, you are carefully seeing the path how it has grown to this level. So, you are going backward and finding out how it has been constructed, how it has been fabricated. So that way you are now going backward and see the causes. So this we can say a little amount of thinking is involved, but not the typical obsessive thinking, but we are applying yoniso manasikara, we are going to the root, going to the source and trying to find out the causes.
Thank you, Bhante, for the clarification. And I'd like to invite Shalika to please ask your question directly.
Bhante, actually, this question is something related to yoniso manasikara. So that's why I just want to, I got some sort of like an answer from the previous answer that you had given to her. So basically what I want to know is in yoniso manasikara, like you were saying, like, we have to start thinking backwards to find out the root cause. So that root cause is like, as an example, like, I feel angry or something, so how I got agitated, it's that thing, or that's, just identified as, that is that anger, like that thought that it just came to my mind. It was the one, it's like, created this whole big story that in my mind.
So actually, once you start to look back, so this whole, now this agitated, currently assume now the mind is agitated. Now you are angry. So it's already boiling. Now, if you are able to stop further feeding it, further sort of strengthening it, now you can fairly keep it controlled. Now, assume now you started to go back. Now you completely stop feeding it. You are no more sort of boiling. Rather, you start to go back. How it is, how it has happened, how I have started thinking like this. So what was the early causes? What were the early symptoms of this whole situation? Now there you can probably recognize, okay, I have seen a little something, kind of a sign, kind of a, say, assume kind of a person. So I again immediately remember what he did. Again, remember that he may do something further in the future. So likewise, I started to think this way, that way, this way, that way. So likewise, I started to weave this whole bunch of thoughts. I started to weave this whole constructed view. So likewise, so once you are clearly analyzing what has really happened in the mind, it is not that immediately we got angry. Rather, I mean, due to some, say, since we do the thinking very quickly, it may appear like quickly we become angry. But sort of if we slowly sort of analyze it, carefully analyze it, we can say, so it's a kind of a gradual constructing nature is there, kind of fabrication is there. So as a result, I am kind of weaving these thoughts, and ultimately it become like a fog, appear like a kind of a mist, appear like a complete cloud, where your mind is now under the complete influence of that cloud. So you can't now see the real nature. Completely mind become hindered, completely you lost that clarity, and you are now angry. So by applying yonisō manasikāra means, first of all, we need to stop feeding the anger. That's the first thing. And now we are sort of somewhat in a control, and now we apply mindfulness. We are able to step back ourselves. We are no more in the picture. We are now in the audience. Now we can watch the picture. And now, as we are further gain great strength, now we can apply wisdom, and we can go back how this story being viewed, how we have created this story, how we have directed this story. So likewise, we are slowly sort of disentangling the whole thing.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. And sometimes, you know, I feel like, this kind of like, you know, basically, little anger comes to my, you know, mind, you know, as soon as it's coming now, I started actually feeling that, okay, I'm getting angry, you know, so yes. I'm getting agitated. So I am, then after that, you know, once I feel that, then basically that anger goes away,
away.
So,
exactly.
Because I can, like, you know, stop it right there.
Yes.
And I sometimes feel like, you know, maybe like, you know, I'm so tired, you know, because of that I get agitated. So I know there's nothing there. It's just me getting tired or something, like, you know, that is what it causes. So, thank you so much, Bhante. Yeah. I really, you know, thank you very much. I got a really good picture of the yonisō manasikāra.
So if we don't have enough mindfulness, we unknowingly feed anger, and we reach to some extent, and then only we start to feel it. And assume now you regain mindfulness, you are able to stop feeding the anger, and that's why I mentioned, so more the clarity of mind is available, more the mindfulness is available, we are able to recognize anger or any hindrance at their early stages. But if we have weak mindfulness, then we don't have that capacity. But again and again, once we are developing mindfulness and we develop this art, slowly we gain that capacity. Then we can recognize these hindrances at their early stages. So this recognition itself is now capable of removing them. Because you stop feeding them at their very early stages. So they become sort of weak, they become powerless, and they simply go away. So that's why, as you have mentioned, whenever you now are recognizing now there's an angry thought arising, now that very understand, that very awakening simply reduces it, simply fades it away, simply removes that hindrance. And again, your mind become calm, and you can apply any other method even. So thinking that this, if I feel it, this may be further growing, I am the one going to suffer, no point. So likewise, you can apply whatever method and you can stop that feeding, and then it becomes kind of nullified.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I'd like to invite Chicha Devi to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Now, Bhante, this Nivarana, sometimes it's part of one's personality, isn't it, Bhante? Now, there are some people who get angry easily, or some people who are rather restless all the time. So isn't that a part of one's personality that one has to look into and try to work with it?
Exactly. That's what I want to point out, that small part coming in the Dvedhavitakka Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So Buddha says, whatever we frequently practice, so that become our nature. So if you start to become, so applying again and again some sort of way, some way of thinking, ultimately it become your nature. So that is why we all have different sort of personality traits, kind of habits, and we need to properly recognize them. So rather than we identify with them, or we sort of appreciate it, I am like this, I am like that. So like that is how we talk. Say you have kind of a nature to sort of become angry. So rather than we possess it, rather than we exaggerate it, rather than we identify with it, so that we need to recognize as a kind of weakness in me. So now I have to correct it. So why am I feeding that wrong nature? Why am I further strengthening that bad habit? So likewise, we should be able to have a very unbiased, honest revealing of ourselves. Then only we are able to remove those wrong hindrances the tendencies or the traits in our mind.
Because it can be a genetic thing also, Bhante, you know. Some people are very peaceful, you know, they are, nothing bothers them, even if it's quite oppressive for some people. So it is also a genetic thing that comes into play. So there's the environment and everything, isn't that
exactly
right,
Mansi? Yeah, I mean, many causes are there. It is not a single cause. Now, how you have grown up, what is the environment that you are upbringing, what is the environment that you are sort of associating, who are you are associating. And so likewise, there are many causes influence this nature in ourselves. And that is how we need to understand what is really happening, why this nature is growing in myself. Now say, for example, nowadays, now everywhere, lot of issues are there in the whole world. Assume now you are again and again watching the news. Again and again you are going to say internet, you are watching the news, you are switching on the TV, watching the news. So assume that you do like that. So ultimately you become agitated. You become really depressed. So that is what, if we are associating that kind of a nature again and again, it is unavoidable that we become depressed. So likewise, we need to honestly recognize what are the causes. Why am I getting agitated? Why am I getting angry? Why am I getting frustrated? So what are the causes? So these causes has to be properly recognized, and then we have to remove those causes. Then slowly we are not feeding that nature in ourselves. And in the opposite side, we can develop. That is also another option. Say you develop loving kindness, so you develop sort of seclusion, you develop meditation, you develop mindfulness. So likewise, you are now developing the positive qualities so that you are able to recover from this agitation. Yeah.
But that is something we have to do also in our daily life, isn't it, Bhante?
Yes, yes.
Because not in meditation, of course, a lot of these things can get suppressed or whatever it is, because we are doing a mindfulness of breathing or whatever we are doing.
Yeah.
But during the daytime, we have to watch this every minute. Isn't
exactly.
That right?
Exactly. So that's why in the Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana sections requires fair amount of mindfulness. So now the mindfulness is not something that you develop according to a schedule. You don't have any kind of fixed time to develop mindfulness. Rather, you become mindful from the very moment you wake up. So you always have a sort of a look or kind of watch into your mind, and you are aware of yourself, what is really going on. So this self-awareness become a nature of yourself. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. I have one more question to ask you, but that's just gone off my mind.
Yeah.
But doesn't matter. It must be not important. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, welcome.
So, Bhante, the next question is, if the root cause of the trigger is the critical nature or behavior of a person that you work with and happens frequently, what should you do, especially if you have to continue the work relationship?
Could you repeat the question, Jennifer?
Sure. So if the root cause of the trigger, I'm assuming trigger for the hindrance, if the critical nature or behavior of a person that you work with and happens frequently, what should you do, especially if you have to continue that work relationship?
Right. Yeah, I mean, different techniques actually we can apply. So one is that we have to develop a fair amount of forgiving nature. So we can't expect kind of a perfection from myself or perfection from the other person. So none of us are perfect. So that way we have to have a kind of a forgiving nature in ourselves. So he is also not perfect. So he is also maybe with a lot of difficulties. He may be going through a lot of his family problems or whatever other problems. So he may be not in a kind of a relaxed situation. So likewise, we have to look at kind of a big picture, and we have to have sort of a compassion, sort of a forgiving nature. And on the other hand, so we can, that is from the outside perspective. But on the other hand, when it comes to our inside, so why even when someone is behaving like that, so why am I getting agitated? So there is something wrong in myself as well. So, I mean, if I am able to develop a fair amount of mindfulness, again, there are no hindrances, there are no defilements at all in myself. So irrespective of whatever the other person may do, I can maintain my calmness. I should be able to maintain my calmness. So if cannot, that means still there is something to develop in myself. So we can utilize this opportunity to understand about our weaknesses, understand about our capacities. So once we understand our levels, our capacities only, then we have to further develop. We have the opportunity to further develop. So rather than thinking that I am perfect, so why not we think, okay, still my mind agitated when the other person do something different. So I expect him to behave in a certain manner, but when he is not behaving in that manner, I get upset, I get agitated, I get angry. So why am I getting angry? So this is kind of a question that we need to ask from ourselves. So why am I expecting certain behavior from another person? Do I have the sort of controllability onto myself? Is it possible for me to control all the moods in myself? Is it possible to control all the situations in myself? Or am I not in such position? So if I don't have that kind of a capacity, if I don't have that much of a governability, is it fair to expect such a governability from another person? So that is a kind of a question that we can ask. So we think that the other person should govern himself, should control himself, should behave properly, and we have a lot of shoulds, and we are trying to apply the same thing to ourselves as well, but we can't do it because we are human and we are not perfect. So time to time we also lose ourselves, so we sometimes lose our control and we get on to moods. Certain hindrances come and influence our mind. So more and more we develop mindfulness, that is what we are trying to recognize. So how our mind gets colored, how our minds get hindered, how we become burdened. So once we are able to recognize that nature at its very early stages, there's a higher possibility of recovering it very quickly. So sometimes we call it as resilience. So as we develop mindfulness, we are developing a fair amount of resilience. We can quickly regain that clarity, we can quickly regain that stability in the mind. So irrespective of how the outside world behaves, we are able to maintain the stability in the mind. So the ups and downs in the mind become less, the amplitude of the up and down become less and less. So we are able to maintain that stable, original, or say that baseline in our mind quite often. So this is, even though I am telling to you, don't think that I am perfect. So we all have to try that. So this is what Buddha is teaching us. So how to maintain this baseline, how to maintain this equanimity, how to maintain this clarity, how to maintain this stability. Because all these external conditions in a way agitate the mind, in a way have the capacity to sort of either take the mind to the up or to the down. So it's our nature to return to that baseline again and again, as quickly as possible. So that is the very teaching that Buddha teaches in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. So due to various outside, say, triggers, as you have mentioned, due to various triggers from coming from the outside, again and again mind become agitated. But how quickly I can regain my stability? So it's very much like we have to behave like a shock absorber. So even though any kind of a shock happens, we should be able to regain our stability. So it's not a one day task, one day program. It's a lifetime task.
Thank you, Bente. The next question is the unhindered mind during mindfulness the same as the quality of mind in equanimity during Brahmavihara meditation?
Actually, I can say no, because here the unhindered mind, I mean, you can say very similar to Brahma Vihara Upekkha, that quality. So that is fairly, by the way, from the Samatha point of view. But on the other hand, when one develops mindfulness and wisdom, that is from the Vipassana approach, so here equanimity is fairly, we can say, based on the wisdom. And you have see the real nature of the things. You have see the real nature of the phenomena, how they are behaving, how they appear, how they disappear. So fair amount of observation has happened onto the real phenomena. So this actually has major impact in the mind. So you now understand the nature of the phenomena. You understand how transient they are, how vulnerable they are, and say how much these phenomena are constantly being suffering, subjected to kind of a suffering because of this transient nature. And how there is no control at all onto this. And you are very much like no control at all. So all these phenomena have their own causes and conditions. So we don't have much control. So you understand this non-self nature. So this understanding of these three characteristics, universal characteristics, that is the impermanence, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, non-self. And these are the causes, these are the proper reasons for you to have kind of the equanimity. So this is the equanimity that we are talking in the fairly deep levels of Satipatthana. Whereby understanding these characteristics, you now has let go of all the phenomena. Now your mind become free. Now you gain sort of a stability of the mind. Now you gain kind of an equanimity. So that is by seeing the real nature of the character, seeing the real nature of the phenomena. Not just by developing equanimity using the Brahma Viharas, or not just by developing fourth jhana. Rather, you are going through fair amount of observation to real phenomena, and you have seen again and again how transient they are, how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how non-governable they are. And this is how you develop this sort of equanimity.
Thank you, Benji. Next question is, can the characteristics of the present life be due to samsaric habits?
Sure. That is also there. So we have some samsaric habits coming from our past lives. So that is also has to be recognized. So that's what I mentioned, that rather than we are trying to inherit it, rather than we are trying to sort of appreciate it, thinking that this is my good nature, this is my bad nature, that I so telling like that, so why not I am trying to correct it? So all of us has all that habits, but Buddha tells us that we all can correct ourselves. I am not telling that 100%, but at least to some extent we are able to recognize these bad habits. And we don't need to be a victim of it again and again. So this is why Buddha talks about the Sabbasava Sutta, say for example. So we are recognizing all these habits, and there are various methods to apply so that we can overcome those habits. We can at least not to further strengthen those habits.
And for the next question, I'd like to invite Indira to please ask your question.
Can I bounce it? Swaminathan, now in Chittanupassana, we look at the thoughts that comes to our mind. And here in Dhammanupassana, that we go a further step and see why that thought, like say if I have a doubt about someone, so I realize it's a doubt, or that I'm angry. And then do we go into another step and see why I am angry? Because I want it my way.
Yeah.
And then you let it go.
Yeah, that is correct. So basically, so going to the roots, going to the applying fair amount of yonso manasikara, understanding this conditioned nature is one part of Dhamma Anupassana. So at the level of Chitta Anupassana, we are not that much matured to apply it, but slowly we gain that capacity. So, I mean, you can't have a kind of a clear-cut boundary telling, okay, now you do Chitta Anupassana, now you do Dhamma Anupassana. As we start to look at our mind, slowly we gain these skills. So that is why Buddha first introduced, recognize the presence of a particular hindrance. And then you understand the absence of a particular hindrance. So likewise we are developing. And later, so mind has fair amount of clarity. And while maintaining that clarity, okay, now I am getting a kind of a hindrance. Now there is a lustful thought. Now there is an angry thought. So likewise, you are able to recognize the arising part of this defilement. So once you know the arising part, then there is a higher chance of recognizing the causes.
And the other thing, Swaminath, now when we practice, so yeah, then we can like say I'm getting angry, then yeah, I can straight away go and look into the cause. No, I mean, yes, if I have clarity in my mind.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, it is not a single method available. I mean, there may be many methods. We ourselves can come up with many methods. So that the clarity of the mind helps us to see many aspects. Rather than we being conditionally or habitually seeing a particular way, now mind has the clarity to see something properly. So we can get a proper decision rather than we take a kind of biased decision.
We always take biased decisions, no, Swaminath?
Yes, yes.
We have... It's covered with conditions.
Yes, yes.
But now we are looking at ourselves and we are understanding ourselves more and more, and so that defilements, they reduce making defilements.
Exactly. That's why. Now, say for example, that's what Buddha mentioned by giving these similes. Say our mind is under the influence of sensual desire. Buddha say it's very much like mind is colored. It's very much like a water being colored using a dye or using a whatever coloring. So then we are looking at the outside using that colored mind, using that kind of a color spectacle. Now you can't get the proper decision. Now your mind is under the influence. Now you take a biased decision. But on the other hand, when the mind is free from hindrances and when the mind has the clarity, then there is no influence at all. I mean, at least to some extent, there is no influence. At least less influenced and less biased. Now you can get a correct perspective. Now you can get the correct idea about what is really going on. Then the decision is fairly correct.
So in other way, you are saying in meditation, we just look at ourselves, our thoughts and our feelings and everything, and we try to get rid of it, like detach with those things.
Exactly. So it's not really get rid of them, but rather, as you said, as we more and more we recognize them, we are able to look at them objectively. We are not afraid of them, and even these hindrances become a way of developing wisdom. So we see the nature of their coming and what are the causes, and there we recognize the dependent arising aspect of them. And then we are developing further wisdom. So it's very much like even the hindrances are being used to develop mindfulness and wisdom.
Okay. clear.
Thank you,
That is all of the questions that we've received for tonight.
Yeah. So thank you very much for participation. I think we spend almost 1 hour and about 15 minutes. So with that, we'll conclude today's Dhamma sermon, or so the Sutta teaching. We'll share the merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.